You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact that you might not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. So visit progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary. Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, but this guy that I know, let's just say, is. So whether you're like me or the guy I know, or you're really into weed, whatever it is, you're about to nerd out big because there's this company called Mood.com, that's changing the way people buy cannabis. Here's the science, and this is the part I love. The reason different cannabis strains make you feel different ways isn't just about THC, it's also based on other components called terpenes. Terpenes influence how your bud tastes and smells, but they also affect what you feel. So one terpene might make you feel uplifted and energetic, and another one makes you relaxed and sleepy. There are dozens of these, so when you have the right combination of terpenes, you can feel social, focused, creative, aroused, chilled out, or whatever. You just go to mood.com, click Shop by Mood, and that's it. Want to be more social at a party? There's flower for that. Need to focus and get more work done? There's flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and comes in a discreet box. Best of all, everything is backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code JFK. So head to mood.com and get 20% off of your first order with code JFK. To say that the study of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy is a complex topic would be a huge understatement. The case is like a forest. There are many trees, and each tree must be analyzed up close. Knowing how those trees fit in to the overall forest is just as important as the trees themselves. Without keeping the big picture in mind, it's very easy to get lost in the details. We're about to get started on our journey of exploring all the disputed issues of the JFK case from both sides. Before we dive into the evidence, first, let's talk about where we're getting most of our evidence from by looking at the history of all the government investigations and some civil litigation related to the murder of President Kennedy.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
I don't know what this is all about.
Dallas police this morning resumed questioning the man they have formally charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
I'm just a child of
the man is Lee Oswald.
Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? Commission answers, he acted alone.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. The case of the JFK assassination, or tangential parts of it, has been taken up by several governmental bodies. The most famous of these is the Warren Commission. Shortly after the assassination, President Johnson appointed the Warren Commission to investigate the murder of John F. Kennedy, which it determined in its eponymously named September 1964 report that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. But subsequent government investigations, criminal trials, and civil trials would raise new questions and poke holes in existing arguments, generating primary documents for posterity along the way. The next official government inquiry into the case involved New Orleans businessman Clay Shaw, who was arrested on March 1, 1967 and charged with conspiring to assassinate JFK. In the Shaw trial, New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison shined a light on alleged Oswald and intelligence community ties that were happening in Garrison's own backyard of New Orleans. While Garrison uncovered many leads to be followed regarding CIA involvement, the prosecution was based on the premise that Clay Shaw was at the center of the assassination, when there really was not much evidence for that. A jury found that Shaw was not guilty in 1969. Most notably, the Garrison case gave us the plot for Oliver Stone's movie JFK, where Garrison is played by Kevin Costner. In 1975, after years of dealing with the Watergate scandal, the Rockefeller Commission was set up by President Gerald Ford to investigate the activities of the CIA. In addition to Watergate, the commission was created in response to a December 1974 New York Times article that the CIA had conducted illegal domestic activities, including experiments on American citizens. The primary findings of the Rockefeller Commission were related to the CIA's illegal MKUltra mind control program. But in addition to that, the commission also studied whether CIA agents E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis were present in Dallas on November 22, 1963. At around the same time as the president's Rockefeller Commission, there were similar committees in the House and Senate looking into illegal activities of the CIA. In the House, the Pike Committee investigated the CIA, and in the Senate, it was the Church Committee. The Church Committee's report exposed CIA assassinations of foreign leaders in the 50s and 60s, which led President Ford to issue an executive order banning U.S. assassinations of foreign leaders. Over 50,000 documents have been released from the Church Committee through the JFK Assassination Records Collection Act. The revelations that came out from the Church and Pike committees and from the Rockefeller Commission about the CIA doing dirty deeds in other countries and conducting experiments on its own citizens caused a public demand for a reinvestigation into the assassination of President Kennedy. The ultimate catalyst for the reinvestigation was Coretta Scott King's testimony before Congress that she had to know what really happened to her husband, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was assassinated in 1968, allegedly as the result of a lone gunman, according to FBI reports.
The FBI had something to do with that conspiracy. It seems to me that the surveillance that my husband underwent as he traveled around the world by the FBI, and the things that have already been revealed that are on record, point toward the FBI having certainly known what was happening. And if there was some conspiracy there, that they should have known who the people were that were involved, because he was under constant surveillance. And I cannot believe that they would not have known about all the plots and all the people and where they were at various times.
So in September 1976, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, the HSCA, was formed to investigate the assassinations of JFK and Martin Luther King Jr. The report that finally came out of the HSCA was a head-scratcher for Warren Report critics and defenders alike. Lee Harvey Oswald fired 3 shots at JFK, just as the Warren Report says. But there was also a 4th shot that came from a 2nd assassin located somewhere in the front who missed. According to the HSCA, there had been a conspiracy after all, but the government did not know who the 2nd shooter was. After the release of Oliver Stone's film JFK, public outcry led to the passing of the JFK Records Act in 1992. Now, the act created the Assassination Records Review Board, or ARRB, to determine whether government agencies could postpone the disclosure of JFK assassination-related materials. The board met for 4 years, from 1994 to 98, and they issued a final report that had some very controversial findings we'll discuss later. The goal of the ARRB was to obtain declassification of JFK assassination-related documents so that the American people could decide for themselves what happened. While 300,000 documents have been released so far, both Presidents Trump
and Biden have continued to delay the release of the remaining 16,000 documents. As of now, President Biden has committed to disclose the remaining documents by December 15th of 2022. The Mary Farrell Foundation, a nonprofit research group, has filed a lawsuit to expedite the release of those records, which were all supposed to have already been released in October of 2017. In addition to the government inquiries, there are also three cases of civil litigation that touch on the assassination. In 1961, Henry Marshall, an official for the Department of Agriculture, was found dead from 5 gunshot wounds. The official cause of death was suicide. 23 years later, Marshall's family had his body exhumed for the purpose of determining whether the cause of death was murder. A trial was ordered where a judge ultimately found that there was clear and convincing evidence that Marshall was murdered. What's interesting is the evidence the judge relied on to reach that conclusion. In the case, a former Lyndon Johnson associate named Billy Sol Estes wrote a voluntary statement to the court where he claimed that Marshall was murdered by Mack Wallace. Now, Mack Wallace was Lyndon Johnson's go-to hitman, according to Estes. Estes submitted a list to the judge of all the people he personally knew LBJ had ordered Wallace to kill over the years. This list included Johnson's own sister and President John F. Kennedy, whom Estes claims Wallace fired a shot at in Dallas. The next JFK civil litigation case was in 1978 when former CIA agent Victor Marchetti wrote an article in a weekly newsletter owned by Liberty Lobby saying that E. Howard Hunt was likely part of the plot to kill JFK. Hunt sued Liberty Lobby and Marchetti for defamation. The jury ultimately decided in favor of Marchetti and Liberty Lobby, relying on testimony from former Fidel Castro girlfriend turned anti-Castro Cuban exile, Marita Lorenz, that she drove to Dallas from Miami with a CIA assassin squad and met Hunt in Dallas shortly before the assassination. A jury of randomly selected citizens found that Hunt likely was in Dallas on November 22, 1963. Some jurors later said that they decided Liberty Lobby should have no liability because the legal standard for actual malice was not met, not because it was proven that Hunt was in Dallas that day. In the final instance of civil litigation related to the Kennedy case, Dr. Charles Crenshaw, one of the Dallas doctors who worked on President Kennedy at Parkland, sued the Journal of the American Medical Association for defamation after they claimed that Crenshaw was lying about his treatment of President Kennedy that day, and even that Crenshaw was not present in Trauma Room 1 in Parkland that day. The journal had to reverse course after Crenshaw sued them. It settled for Crenshaw and published a retraction of its story. These three civil cases do not necessarily prove anything about the JFK assassination. Still, to the extent they created evidence, that evidence is fair game to be considered in solving the assassination. We've covered the trail of official government proceedings. We've touched on a few civil cases with material revelations about the assassination that may or may not be true. And other than Freedom of Information Act requests, the only other category of information we'll look at is testimony from eyewitnesses who were not asked to testify before the Warren Commission or an official governmental body. This testimony is usually in the form of the witness being interviewed by an assassination researcher. Obviously, this type of evidence is difficult to assess because we do not have the witness in front of us or the comfort in knowing that the witness gave a sworn statement. Like any other testimony, we must do our best to assess the motives of these witnesses and the veracity of what the person is saying. There are many deep rabbit holes to traverse within JFK assassination research. Some of them are completely ridiculous and will waste your time. Some of them are interesting, but don't affect the overall outcome. The only way to know for sure is to take the journey down the rabbit hole. The good news is that there's a clear starting point. The Warren Report. The central argument about the JFK assassination is over whether Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin, as the commission claimed. If the answer to that question is Oswald did it alone and the Warren Report has been right all along, then we need not reach many other of the rabbit holes because they won't matter. We'll already know that Oswald did it alone. But if we find that the weight of the evidence is against Oswald acting alone, or that we have new questions to answer, we'll dive down those rabbit holes and go as far as we can go. When you look at the events in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963, there are several primary scenes where everything happens. Within each scene, there are disputed questions and conflicting evidence. This podcast is going to take on the hilariously gargantuan task of trying to answer those questions and to ultimately find out if Oswald acted alone. We'll start our investigation inside the Texas School Book Depository Building. Where exactly inside the Texas School Book Depository Building was Oswald at the time of the shooting? Are there any fingerprints tying Oswald to the rifle or the area where the shots were fired? Did anyone see Oswald bring a gun into the Texas School Book Depository Building? Did anyone see Oswald or any other gunman in the window of the building? How did the assassin escape from the building? After we answer those questions, we'll zoom in on the primary piece of evidence tying Oswald to the crime, Oswald's rifle. Now, did Oswald practice shooting? Was he ever seen at any rifle ranges around Dallas? Did Oswald own the rifle that the Warren Report says he did? Is there a chain of custody to prove it? Was the rifle an Italian Mannlicher or was it a German Mauser? And why was there initially so much confusion on this issue? Was there a scope installed on the gun? If so, was it installed for a left-handed person or a right-handed person? Did the bullet fragments that were found at Parkland Hospital and elsewhere match the rifle in evidence? Next, we'll go to Dealey Plaza and we'll look at all the eyewitness testimony and evidence along the parade route in the moments before and after Kennedy was shot. Were there any abnormalities that day with the presidential motorcade and security plan? What did witnesses in Dealey Plaza say about the direction they believe the shots were fired from? Were there Secret Service agents on or near the grassy knoll after the shooting? What does the Zapruder film show? Could Oswald have made the shots required for the Warren Report single bullet theory? After we answer those questions, we'll go to Parkland Hospital and its conflicting evidence counterpart, Bethesda Naval Hospital. Was Jack Ruby at Parkland? When did Kennedy's casket arrive at Bethesda? Did the doctors think Kennedy's front neck wound was an entrance or exit wound? Where did the doctors say the location of Kennedy's back wound was, the top of his neck or closer to his shoulder? According to the doctors, was the shot that hit Kennedy in the head fired from the front or the rear? Could the bullet that was allegedly found on a stretcher at Parkland, known as CE-399, have caused the damage that the Warren Report's single bullet theory claims it did? How does the single bullet theory hold up against the medical evidence? What does the autopsy tell us? Once we answer those questions, we will move on to Oak Cliff to examine the mysterious case of the J.D. Tippit murder. What was Tippit doing out of his normal patrol area in Oak Cliff at the time? Who was this suspect that Tippit was looking for, and where did the description come from? Did the bullets found at the scene match Oswald's revolver? What did the eyewitnesses who saw the crime scene shortly before or after the crime see? Did Tippit know Oswald and Ruby? Would it have been possible for Oswald to kill Tippit based on the Warren Report's timeline? Did Tippit honk at Oswald in front of his rooming house? Did they find Oswald's jacket near the crime scene, or was that not his jacket? After we answer all of those questions, we will move on to the Texas Theater, where Oswald supposedly goes to see a movie after he kills Tippit. How was Oswald arrested? Was he found inside the theater? What do witness statements about Oswald at the Texas Theater say about why he chose to go there? From which exit did the arrested Oswald depart in a police vehicle, the front or the rear? Was there an Oswald lookalike at the Texas Theater? Was Jack Ruby at the Texas Theater? After we answer the questions about the Texas Theater, we'll look at the Dallas Police Department as the next scene. Oswald spends Friday night through Sunday morning at the police department before ultimately being shot and killed by nightclub owner Jack Ruby on Sunday morning while being transferred to the county jail. What was Oswald's state of mind when he was arrested? What did police officers say about him or what he was saying? What happened at the jail while Oswald was there? Did Jack Ruby have an abnormally close relationship with the Dallas police? How did Ruby get in to kill Oswald? Maybe most importantly, why did Ruby kill Oswald? There may not be clear-cut answers to all these questions, and there are many questions, but we can weigh the evidence that exists and determine the most likely answers, and we'll encounter even more questions as we go along. I suppose that's how rabbit holes work. Next time on Solving JFK, we'll go to the Texas School Book Depository Building and look at whether it was possible for Oswald to be on the sixth floor at the time JFK was shot. If you disagree with anything you heard in this episode, or if you think I'm leaving out anything important, let me know. You can email solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com with a citation to whatever your claim is, and we'll consider it for a rebuttal episode at the end of the season.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit SolvingJFKPodcast.com